Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
But I want to talk something else now. Let's see. Jennifer, how are you, Jennifer? Are you there?
Hi, Dave. Yeah, I am.
Hey, very good. Okay, good start. Okay, at 17, 18 minutes past 1 o'clock. Because I want to take a look at something else. Because, you know, we all get to grips with having more time than ever before. Everybody's making great use of Netflix and other streaming services. But even with an endless supply of movies and TV that we've, you know, never seen before and more access than ever, there's a huge thing. People seem to return to the things that they already have seen 100 times over. I've done it myself at Christmas every year. It's Home Alone 1 or 2 all the time in our place. So Jennifer O'Mara, as in Dr. Jennifer O'Mara, Assistant Professor of Film Studies in Trinity College in Dublin, I hope you're going to be able to answer these questions as to why we do all this. You've noticed this phenomenon during the week. Why is it that people gravitate back to things that they've seen 10, 20, 30, 40 times before?
Yeah, I think at a basic level, there is this comfort in the familiar. There's a sense of reassurance in watching something where you know how it's going to end, but everything's going to be really neatly resolved, say, in 2 hours. And rewatching things also reflects how certain films are meaningful for personal reasons. Maybe people can associate a film with a particular time in their life, maybe with their childhood or their adolescent. It might have been a film that they once owned on VHS or DVD, and now they're able to stream it whenever they want.
Do you think there's a difference between the kind of an autobiographical past and a historical nostalgia kind of thing? Like, one is like the second one's longing for the past, but the one is longing for a specific past that people are looking at.
Yeah, definitely. I think it goes back to the kind of escapist nature of cinema. Particularly Hollywood films, and that they've always kind of played this role. Even if you go back to, say, the US in the 1930s after the Great Depression, and you had all the Walt Disney films starting to come out and The Wizard of Oz, anything that could transport audiences into another world where the external threats, whatever they might be, could eventually be overcome in this kind of safe narrative. So the idea of going back to a happier time or a more familiar time, I think, is part of the appeal, definitely.
But do you think also one of the driving forces is that you're not going to be surprised, you know? Like, you pick up minor details as well. There's a lot of reasons why you might do it, basically.
Exactly. So it might be the film, you know, the overall film. It could just be a great performance that you want to revisit, or, say, a well-written screenplay where you're almost waiting to hear particular favourite lines of dialogue again. Or maybe something about the sets or the cinematography that are just visually pleasing. That's just nice to be immersed in that particular space again.
And do you think the times we do be living in now, do you think particularly in times of stress, people like to return to the familiar?
Definitely. And I think part of what we're seeing online now, particularly on sites like Twitter, is people trying to share their viewing experiences. So maybe live tweeting along to this. So we've seen some popularity of the so-called co-video parties in the last week or two, where you have people deciding in advance what they're going to watch and picking a time. And then people are live tweeting along to it as they're rewatching it. So you're getting that kind of social aspect maybe of going to the cinema with friends or just of being with friends, because you're all watching the same thing and you can share maybe trivia about, you know, moments in the film or new observations or favourite lines. Even seeing people, you know, taking pictures of themselves watching the film or just of the TV screen or the laptop screen. So all kind of sharing that film again in a new context.
So, you know, can I use the word therapeutic then? Like, do you think it's good for people?
Definitely. I think especially with so much, not everyone obviously has more time now on their hands, but for people who do, with films, the fact that you can sit down and maybe have 2 hours that you spend, that kind of takes up 2 hours, but it's something you can kind of immerse yourself in. So it's the same with, say, I suppose people would talk about meditation or other kinds of therapy. And I think, you know, films can provide that. It's one of many strategies, I suppose, for coping at the moment.
Yeah, so like it's obviously like, okay, so we'll see it as some kind of a comfort and a reassurance from the predictability of it all kind of thing. Like, do you think in some ways that the unknown future that we're talking so much about now, causing anxiety, etc., and like we have something hardwired to keep us safe, hey, let's watch a movie we know already?
Exactly, yeah. So that sense that you can, you know how it's going to end. You know it's probably, if you're watching, say, a Hollywood film, it's going to have a happy ending. It's all going to work out well for the main characters. And I think particularly at the moment where people don't know how long the current situation is going to go on, they don't know what it's going to mean for them or for their families, that having a sort of set narrative one that you know how it's going to end, and you kind of enjoy that sense of there's a lack of uncertainty at the moment, or there's a lack of comfort and knowledge.
Aha, okay.
And we get that. Yeah.
Okay, well then there's the word comfort, because you know if you know that a movie makes you happy, you'll experience the pleasure of kind of anticipating the emotion and the overall actual sort of actuality, if you like, of feeling it. So therefore, is the cinema like this, is it the equivalent of comfort food?
Definitely, and I think you're probably seeing that as well. So people are spending so much time with media and music, and then also with food, and I think they work well together. And yeah, definitely, I think the sense of comfort, sense of familiarity, and just maybe good for your mental health right now. Ultimately, it's one of many strategies that people are kind of going to, along with, as you say, comfort food.
Well then, what is it, or is there a formula? What is it that makes a film rewatchable? Even by the way, sometimes even if it's not very good.
Yeah, and I think often the idea that it can vary. So maybe it's a film that is just sort of rich enough or entertaining enough that it bears repeating. But often what you see, particularly with cult films, is that they're perceived as being poorly made or so bad they're good, and that people want to revisit them as a result. So ones that are maybe particularly badly received on their release, but they're so distinctive or bizarre, or there's maybe a really poor performance, and people enjoy that aspect of them. So I suppose one of the recent examples is the Cats remake fairly recently, where it was kind of panned critically, but even now people were very excited to see that it was getting its online release the other week, and that they were saying this is, you know, the perfect film for watching now, because it's almost, yeah, so bad it's good, that it's quite entertaining in terms of the strange choices, and it just makes for good kind of distraction. There's lots you can kind of pick up on and talk about, and the bizarreness of it almost fits the time, I suppose. The idea that life right now maybe feels a bit unreal and a bit film-like. People were even talking about the fact that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar the other night was quoting apparently Terminator 2 in one of his speeches, so a line about fate, and the idea that, you know, a lot of people are feeling like they're kind of trapped in a film themselves, and they're maybe watching films like Contagion from 2011 in order to kind of get a sense of how this might play out for us as well.
Have you ever watched a movie more than 10 times?
Yes, I would say definitely. Not recently, but I mean, and again, going back to films from your childhood, things you watch, teen films, films like Clueless, that really, you know, it's just pleasurable, you know them off by heart, and yes, that's part of the appeal. It just brings you back, and there are obviously moments, there are reasons why you like it so much, and they usually don't change over time.
I mean, I could think of at least with Neil and I, Nashville and Casablanca, I've definitely seen double figure times, all right, and I would see them more and more, not just to go back, but just to, like, I mean, the nuances, the bits you pick up, the lines, the like bits you didn't see first time around. Do you think there's a formula to making a film that people will come back to over and over? I mean, is it something even that filmmakers might aim for, or studios might aim for?
Yeah, I imagine, you know, that all, you know, filmmakers want to make something that's rich enough or entertaining enough that it bears repeating. But that in terms of a formula, I suppose it depends on people's taste, but also some of the kind of magic that can happen can depend on bringing together of different talents. So whether it's, you know, the actors themselves, that they just happen to, you know, perform in a really impressive way. It's the chemistry maybe between actors. But then you can also have, you know, is it the bringing together of the music, the soundtrack, the cinematography, things that just together, when they come together, you get a kind of, it's more than the sum of the parts. Things that maybe you can't predict in advance exactly how it's going to work out.
Yeah,
just thinking about films like Blade Runner, for example, or Wong Kar Wai is In the Mood for Love, that I could just revisit again and again because the universe just seems to be so well realised in terms of the choices that have been made, like at a kind of aesthetic level, the performance choices, the uses of music, it all just, the atmosphere means that they don't really age. They're quite classic in that sense.
Yeah, and also to get back to that comfort side of things, it's easy to retreat to a film that we know won't disappoint us. I mean, it takes up less mental energy, if you like. It's less taxing, more relaxing.
Exactly, yeah. So there isn't a sense, maybe, I don't know that many people would be seeking out, you know, world cinema, foreign films right now, and, you know, having to watch subtitles. Not that there's anything wrong with them, of course, but like when we're spending so much of our time sort of on our screens reading things, people don't want that, that right now. Maybe it's something that's easy to watch that you can have on potentially in the background as other things are happening. You can be slightly distracted and not, and still know what's going on. So there's also that sense. Maybe people aren't in the mental frame of mind to really concentrate on something too taxing.
Yeah, but I mean, even if it is like your Shawshanks from the 90s, or you've mentioned Clueless from the 90s, and then there's like all the Back to the Futures and Top Guns and all that. I mean, the thing is that, you know, rewatching us can make us reflect on how we've grown. So do you think it is a subconscious measuring stick for how much our lives have changed, or am I going a bit too far with this?
I definitely think there's an element to that. I mean, every time you watch it, you might think of the last time you sort of saw it and who you were with or what you were doing. And it goes back to that kind of the social aspect of film that often, you know, in surveys of cinema audiences in different places, you know, going back to looking at people who were asking people questions about the 60s and 70s and what they watched and what they remember about it. And often people will remember who they're with. The context, you know, like was it friends or was it a boyfriend or whatever, or was it family members? And so it takes you back not just to the film, but maybe the place you were in your life at that point. So it maybe makes us quite reflective often in that sense. And also for kind of earlier technology. So maybe people have watched a film on, they had it on a VHS, for example. They might have like worn out their copy, watched, rewinding it so many times in this age before streaming, whereas maybe now younger audiences don't have that exact experience. They've maybe had more access to things online. So different things going on, I suppose.
Well, I mean, even like if it's a movie that might be tinged with melancholy or anything, they can be very soothing, all right. So it's obviously a time right now of huge distress for people. Have you noticed that people are definitely gravitating towards what we call the familiar?
Yeah, definitely. And I think you see that particularly then in the likes of the co-video parties or these lists that are being drawn up by different websites or blogs about saying, you know, these are the films to watch now to distract yourself or to soothe yourself. And it's often comedies or romantic comedies or something people want maybe just to laugh a bit. You know, they don't want maybe to watch something sort of a horror film or a family drama or something that might be a bit too emotionally drawing, or it might require too much from us at this point. So yeah, I think maybe familiar comedies or cult films, they're particularly popular at the moment.
Yeah, by the way, are you doing it yourself finally, Jennifer? Like, would you recommend besides Clueless? So, by the way, if you say Clueless, does that mean yours are all going to be from the same era, right? Mid-90s?
Not quite. I mean, definitely watching earlier films from the 50s at the moment. I can't say I've been doing it yet myself, but I think there's still time and I'll get there. I've been trying to use any extra time I have as an opportunity to see old films that I haven't before. And there are some really good sites beyond sort of Netflix and Hulu where you can come across really interesting things, like the site called Ubu Web, where they have a lot of early avant-garde media and documentaries. And also the Internet Archive's great. It has a lot of, again, historical, unusual recordings freely available, things like sci-fi films from the 50s and film noir and silent cinema. So I think trying to get that mix, I imagine I probably am going to go to some comfort viewing as this goes on. But for now, I'm trying to broaden my horizons just a little bit.
Oh, well, and also just on that one, like, have you ever found yourself of an evening sitting down to watch Netflix and about 45 minutes later, you're still flicking through to see which one to watch?
Definitely. And that's part of the reason why I end up not using Netflix too much. You spend so much time just collating a list or trying to see how the algorithm's working for me or what it's trying to tell me to watch and why. Definitely. I think too much choice there often. I think maybe that's, again, another reason people are just going back to something familiar. They don't have the bandwidth mentally maybe at the moment to watch something new.
Exactly. So, yeah. All right. Well, listen, Jennifer, thanks a million for talking to us in the program today. Dr. Jennifer O'Mara, Assistant Professor of Film Studies at Trinity College in Dublin. Thanks, Jennifer.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.